Welcome to the MLS Net Boys Experience. My name is Jacob.
Oh, man.
Joined by Chase.
I just got shot in the eye. That was wild. But welcome back, nonetheless. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
You are? We got a lot in store today. This is going to be one of the quickest episodes ever.
A lot, but a little. As we do these, and as our team not only spirals out of control, but just dwindles down the table, we're gonna the drive for recording these are... I still love spitting MLS, but it's something about it just doesn't hit when you see all these other teams like getting results and your team's just down in the dumps.
It is... a lot less fun. It's going to get to the point where we like put out a statement where like we have to take a mental health break from doing the podcast.
I vividly remember about 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, Rave Green TV posts this like 45-minute video, and it's called "What Is Wrong with the Seattle Sounders?" And he just lays into everything he's like going through. And I remember like sitting and I watched like the whole thing, and near the end, he's like, "You know what? My desire for making these videos are just, it's not really there. I'm still going to go to a few of these games and record some videos outside of the stadium, but I'm not doing it for every game. I'm just done. This team disappoints me." And I remember my wife was sitting there. She's like, "That's really sad, like how he just doesn't want to do that." And I thought it was hilarious. I was loving life. I know how he feels.
Oh, man.
I know how he feels.
It has been... rough to be a Timbers fan. It is the last game of the week. We could wait and save it for the end, or we could dive into it right now. I mean, I feel like it's probably the one we'll have the most to say about, so we might as well save it till the end.
We'll save it.
A lot of things happened this week, though. A lot of interesting things around MLS. One thing I want to bring up first, though. I want to pick your brain. Old Jesse Marsh, as of today, has been announced as the Canadian national team men's head coach. Do you see his official title is like MLS Canadian head coach?
Yeah, I noticed that the three Canadian MLS clubs, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, like pretty much gave their stamp of approval, and they're like working with him to...
Well, I think they donated a lot of money as well. It was like a donor status thing that got the MLS name on there somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's I don't know. I mean, a lot of people wanted Jesse Marsh for the U.S. national team job, and I'm not really sure how I felt about that. I don't really know how a guy like that's game translates to the international level. I mean, good for Canada, I guess.
I think he'll do well. He's proven he's pretty tactically smart. He's good at building a system. On the international level, it's completely different. But I think the one thing I've noticed about him with his teams is he's good at man management, and like similar to like a John Herdman, like getting guys to buy into a project and be very excited about that project. So a little scary to see a guy like him go north. I've seen a lot of people trying to compare this to Ted Lasso when old Nate the Great, you know, goes and coaches West Ham. What's the equivalent? What would you say this is?
That's weirdly spot on. I think for me, the one I think of is, did you see the clip where Thomas Tuchel and who was the other manager? It was two like Premier League managers like going to shake hands.
It was Thomas Tuchel and who was the other guy? I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
Yeah, they go to shake hands and they just aggressively like just
turn.
Yeah.
I don't know what was wrong with my mic there. It was like it
sounded weird.
It was like it got folded inside out somehow. Yeah, I don't
like,
know.
Like a party chat when somebody sounds like they're talking through a wet sock.
For me, like I said, I don't really have too much of an opinion. For me, it's interesting the timing of it. Like next month is the start of Copa America, and so he has, I think, two warm-up games in June for Canada, and then they're in the Copa America. They're playing it. They made it. So, I mean, I'm curious to see what Canada looks like. How much it's going to differ to before. Is he going to completely overhaul things, or is he going to kind of like ride the pine with what he's had, and then after this, kind of springboard into the next era? We'll see. Interesting hire.
Should be interesting. I'm excited to see what happens from there, but nonetheless, there was a week full of MLS action that was wild and exciting yet again, and we'll dive right into it with our first game here. Atlanta United at home hosting DC United, another United v. United derby, and DC United takes the cake with a Christian Benteke header hat trick. You think they got a game plan for DC?
I saw a stat, and I think it was before this game. Maybe it was after. I'm not sure. Anyway, midway through the match day, they were comparing aerial dual wins in MLS. Benteke was at number one with like 123. The next highest was at like 47.
That is insane.
The guy is a machine in the air.
He is so good. It looks like nobody can even like challenge him. It kind of scary to see him go up in the air. Atlanta United kind of just poor defending, though. Like, a lot of times they just let him go in the box. They seem a little lost. Like, they just that would never have happened if you had like a Tim Parker in that back line, you know?
Atlanta has been very poor recently. They've lost two or three, I think it was three games in a row. They've lost at home, which is the first time in their history. They're sliding. I'm seeing a lot of Pineda out. Really interesting. But one other take I saw that I really enjoy, it was saying, like, in an era of soccer where positional freedom and, like, systems are taking over, it's nice just to see a good old-fashioned big number nine, big Donnie, just cross a ball in the box and let the big man score.
You know what I was thinking after watching the games this week? I would love to see Benteke and João Klaus as a front two.
Street Bucks?
Those two guys with, like, you put, like, Julian Gressel on one side. He's a good left-footed, like, winger. Could throw on the other side. That'd just be pinging him. Maybe Messi, I guess.
Yeah, who? Yaya Boa?
You put some guys on the wing just dropping dimes in the box for two just giants, like, you remember João Klaus just like shoulder checking the SKC player like a week ago, and then you get Benteke up there as well.
Dude,
that would be a fun team to watch.
You remember 2012 San Jose?
Yeah.
The Bash Brothers, they called them. You got Wondolowski, Alan Gordon, Steven Lenhart. We got Benteke. We got to get João Klaus to DC United because that feels more like a Bash Brothers club. Who's the third guy? Who's like the off-the-bench guy?
The off-the-bench giant who's in the league right now? Oh, man. I'm trying to think of another big aerial presence.
Just like...
like striker.
Slightly different profile, but
he's,
yeah.
He's just came into the league, but Kevin Kelsey with Cincinnati, that 19-year-old, that guy is giant, and he's really good in the air as well.
We formed the new Bash Brothers.
Man, that would... You know what's funny? We give the English a bad rap on this show, but that's like kind of the English style of soccer, even though it's not very common in the Premier League anymore. But that's kind of a fun style to watch just in this era. Like, the era that soccer's in now, you see that happen, it leads to some excitement, just watching a big lad just dominate up top.
I love it. You love it. We all love it, unless you're Atlanta.
Exactly. Poor Atlanta, poor form. Let's move on, though. Charlotte hosting Nashville. Patrick Agumon, another goal, kind of cementing his spot amongst the Enzo Capetti rumors for Capetti to be leaving Charlotte FC. Agumon, looking like the true starter there. MLS Next Pro to the first team, and he's looking like he hasn't missed a step.
Looking really, really good. Charlotte looks great at home. They've only lost one game out of seven at home. They've won the other five and then a draw thrown in there. So, yeah, really impressive.
I think I'd put Patrick Agumon in that Bash Brothers trio, actually.
He's the third guy.
Another just absolute beast to put up there. I love watching him play. I think I would hope Charlotte like holds on to that guy for a while because he's awesome for them.
Is he the next Jan Duran? Going to
that's a high bar, man.
Aston Villa scoring a brace against Liverpool. Anyway,
fun game for Charlotte. They're looking pretty good. Patrick Ojimon is looking awesome. You see their little tradition they have for like their man of the match after the game.
They sit on the...
They have, like, a throne in the crowd. Yeah, and he, like, he goes up there, and he's sitting on the throne, and some dude just has, like, a Jordan, and he, like a shoe, and he's, like, putting in his face with a Sharpie, and Patrick Ojimon just, like, signs this guy's shoe and, like, hands it back to him. It's a weird...
It's a very strange tradition.
Yeah, I wonder if that guy is going to ever sell those shoes after Patrick Ojimon has played seven seasons with Charlotte and then goes to, like, Minnesota to finish his career.
On the Fernando Adi trajectory.
Oh man. We'll keep it flying here. We don't want to talk about all these other teams doing well.
We both leading up this were like, I don't want to, we both don't want to dwell on this too long. We want to play some clubs, losing that and let off some steam. So
we weren't just going to get stomped out by some other people. Anyways, CF Montreal hosting Inter Miami. Inter Miami winning 3-2. They just look absolutely undeniable. They when Messi and Suarez are on the field, they look great. And when Messi isn't on the field, they still have other guys that can make a difference. You see the whole clip with the Rojas free kick? I don't know if I said it on the pod, but I was telling you this. I signed that guy in my FM save strictly for his long shots and free kicks, and he has proven that FM has, like, the best scouting department in the entire world because...
Chase is officially a better scout of football operations than Ned Grabovoy.
I was, you know what I was thinking about is, like, Rojas, like, a lot of these guys Miami have brought in would be, like, Rojas would be a DP, like, star player anywhere else in the league. Like, if you were to throw him into any other team, like, throw him in a Minnesota for Reynoso's spot, throw him in, like, a Portland, any other team, this guy would be one of the most crucial players. He'd be, like, the face of a franchise, and he's just slotted into this Miami team and looks like an absolute world beater right away.
Yeah, I hate it. Undeniably, you have the Messi effect going out, and because I don't think, even though it's Miami, it's a very alluring city for a young South American lad. Literally, I think only Ronaldo and Messi are going to be able to pull these sorts of younger players in their prime to go play with these sorts of play in MLS at this age. On a TAM or U22 like salary. Crazy.
Absolutely nuts, but nonetheless, I love to see players like this in the league because at the end of the day when Messi's gone, having players like this it's going to help grow the league by a lot. It's going to improve the quality cuz the rest of the league has to, you know, sign players that can catch up and compete with this level. Cool to see, but should be said, Montreal in this game go up 2-0 in the first half. They were flying. They looked great. The home crowd was behind them. It was a great atmosphere. Bryce Duke getting a goal to start it off. And then it seemed like they just all wind was taken out of their sails before halftime. Rojas with that amazing free kick. Luis Suarez kind of beating somebody at the back post to get a poke in. And then second half, homegrown player Kamashki getting a goal. Kind of a messy, like, little sloppy touch and finish, but gets the job done.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the games Miami's still not at their best, but pulls through, so...
It's scary to think what this team will look like when they start getting players back from injury, like Jordi Alba, Robbie Redondo, Robinson. I was listening to... Extra Time recently, and they're talking about how this roster was built so well, and I kind of didn't really realize the extent of it until they were kind of explaining Miami was really smart by building this roster by having pieces like Robbie Robinson, having pieces like Robert Taylor that are valuable to most of the teams in the league, so during the summer they can just ship those guys off and bring in more young, exciting talent in places that they might need. Really, really well done for their organization, and, you know, as much as I hate to say it, but we'll move on here. New York Red Bulls destroy the New England Revolution 4-2. What do you even say about the Revs at this point? They just look terrible. Worst team in the league by far. I mean, it's getting pretty close with the Timbers, though. Similar issue, though. Their defense just looks rough. There's a lot of space, a lot of gaps. That first goal for Lewis Morgan just seemed like a youth soccer game. Just a bomb over the top. The defender doesn't really try and read it and react to it. It's just over the top. Lewis Morgan's faster than their back line. Gets in behind, scores a goal.
Yeah, it's all falling apart for the Revs. And even more beyond that, I saw something really interesting, and it was a quote on Twitter, and it had to do with, speaking of manager drama with Nick Cushing and John Herdman, this game had some too. Nick Lima, everybody's favorite MLS utility fullback, serviceable at New England, it's his first year there, he got traded there. Well, there's this interchange he had that you could kind of pick up where Caleb Porter's like yelling at him in game and giving him direction, and Nick Lima like turns around and goes, "Let me do my effing job," and just walks away.
Wow.
And I thought, that doesn't seem like a very healthy locker room.
Yeah, it's a tough place for Caleb Porter to be dropped into. That locker room was kind of in disarray at the end of last year. Dropped Caleb Porter into it, thinking he might be able to get a handle on it, and it just seems like it's beyond his control at this point, unfortunately. I love Caleb Porter. I think he's a great coach. Really difficult spot for him to be in right now.
Very unfortunate for Mr. Porter.
We'll move on, though. Philadelphia Union hosting Orlando. I think just about everybody wrote Orlando off in this tie, and then Luis Muriel decides to show up and get his first two goals of the season with an absolute stunner from outside the box. Another really well done goal for his second. What do you even do? Is this more indicative that Orlando are good or that Philly's a fraud? Like, what does this game say to you?
I think Philly is being exposed more. Not just because of this one game. They're three wins, three losses, five draws. Last playoff spot. And I mean, I kind of personally thought this was going to be like their downfall year, that they weren't going to be competing for an MLS Cup. They weren't going to be competing for a Shield. I think the Columbus, Cincy, Miami, those were the teams. I had Orlando included, but those were the teams that were going to compete. And Philly, I don't know, man. You have like this off-the-field drama that's going on. They've underachieved in so many big moments. You have to wonder if just things are going stale in Chester.
But they just signed 14-year-old Kevin Sullivan, who came out and banged the drum before their game.
I mean, that's a cool story for him and his family, but
yeah, I didn't realize how like intertwined the Sullivans are with like Philadelphia and Jim Curtin. Apparently the Sullivan dad was like the coach at whatever college Jim Curtin played at, or he played at that college while Jim Curtin was there. I don't know. They've been connected for a long time. Very like Gio Reyna, Bearhalter-esque, like
he looked like a rich soccer dad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's kind of interesting seeing the you know how intertwined these two families are in the Philly organization. But
it's great till somebody threatens to blackmail them for playing time. So
we'll keep it moving here, though. Toronto hosting New York City FC in probably the most exciting game of the week, not necessarily for the play on the pitch, but what happened off of it. Toronto ultimately loses 3-2. New York City pulls it out. Toronto kind of a victim of their own circumstance. Not the best defending from them in this game. But just absolute chaos off the field in this one. There was a scrap that happened at the end of the game. Sean Johnson, who was a New York City FC player, just
long time
looks like he was absolutely possessed. Eyes wide open, just running through a crowd of people, just grabs a random Eastern European dude by the throat and like headbutts him. It was just pure chaos. What did you take away from the video? Because I think most people have seen it. If not, go look up Toronto FC, New York City FC fight. There's so many, like, it felt like I was looking at like a Where's Waldo picture, because there's just so many different things happening in that video.
It's definitely going to go down as like MLS iceberg lore.
I love it.
Content that I'm going to see referenced in like Reddit comments from like years to come. Like when Nick Cushing gets fired and then like gets rumored with another MLS job, I'm going to see like a comment saying, well, looks like he can't punch somebody in the face this time. Did we mention that or was that before?
No, so I don't think we've mentioned that. So apparently the context, there was a lot of animosity between these two teams from their earlier meeting this season. Jacob destroying another Crystal Geyser water bottle. Last game they played at halftime, they're walking off the field. Nick Cushing approaches Marshall Ruddy, Jaquiel Marshall Ruddy, and has some words for him. Marshall Ruddy gets upset. He's yelling. They have to be separated. They go into the tunnel. Nobody knows what happens after that. This game, same animosity. There's this big fight. There's a lot that happens. You can see at the bottom of the screen during the fight, John Herdman instantly like sprints to Nick Cushing and just like runs his chest into him, and there's like a little coming together of those two. In the press conference afterwards, both John Herdman and their captain, Jonathan Osorio for Toronto, say there's animosity from the previous game when Nick Cushing... Did it stop recording? Oh, man, what are you pulling up?
Wanted to show you something. Good.
You got me worried. I thought it stopped recording again. There's some animosity where from Nick Cushing, you know, kind of crossing a line with something he'd said to their 19-year-old player. And then Jonathan Osorio, you know, makes a claim that in the tunnel they isolated and cornered Marshall Ruddy, and even making the claim that Nick Cushing punched him in the face. Kind of a crazy claim. I don't know. I don't know what to believe. I don't think anybody really knows the truth there. But I mean, anybody who saw that first game and saw Nick Cushing's behavior on the field, like as a coach, it gave off like Vanni Sartini vibes, like just completely unhinged. You're supposed to be like the leader of your whole club, your program, the whole face of it, and he's just like talking smack to a 19-year-old who's like getting his first like real year in the league. Kind of just wild to me. I don't know if he actually punched him. It should be said, New York City FC and Cushing have come out strongly against the claims of hitting him. They didn't say anything about cornering him in the tunnel. All they said was that he's never hit or laid a hand on a player before.
Weirdly enough, in Toronto, in the locker room, there was a alleged scuffle about 4 or 5 years ago with Josie Altidore, and I think it was like some New York Red Bulls players, like Sasha Kljestan. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on in that like locker room up there, but in those tunnels, but there's some weird like aura that New York, yeah, or that a New York club versus a Toronto team in Toronto in the locker room gives off, apparently. That's my analysis.
Sasha Kljestan brought that up in their the MLS like wrap up show. He said I was involved in a similar incident, and then he just kind of dismissed the whole story essentially because he probably has a little bit of a bad blood with Toronto. But yeah, absolutely crazy. And this is kind of funny enough. It's not really like a rivalry match, and it's a rivalry week. And this was the most heated game out of all the games that we saw this week.
I like that, though. I like when you have a matchup of two teams who hate each other, right? Because I mean, like, we joked that neither of these teams were really relevant the last 2 years, but, I mean, New York City FC won a title in 2021. Toronto FC made multiple championships. These teams played a lot in the playoffs, you know, from like 2016, 2017 to like 2020. So
there's some real history between these teams that can't be denied. Not an official rivalry, but there's some history there, and I can't wait to see them play again. I hope they meet in the playoffs this year, because that would be the stakes being higher, the animosity just dragging on. I think that would be awesome to watch. But we'll move on to another rivalry game, a real rivalry game. Columbus hosting FC Cincinnati. This was the only prediction game that either of us got right. Jacob got the score spot on. Cincinnati wins 2-1 at Columbus. Their new striker, Kevin Kelsey, getting a goal. Lucho Acosta getting a goal. Max Arfston, though, just dragging one back at the very end to make Jacob's prediction correct and cost me some points here. Fun game to watch. It was, you know, there was a lot of chances from Columbus. They had a couple go off the crossbar, some other good chances. FC Cincinnati just stayed the course, stayed sturdy in the back, and you know, took their chance as well.
Yeah, I mean, kind of what I thought would happen. I mean, not really an expert prediction. These are two of the top teams. But Cincy probably has a lot of bad blood for this team based off of what happened last year, based off of all their players crumbling. I'm sure it left a huge impression. They didn't have a huge turnover, honestly. And you know nothing more that there's no better feeling as a fan, as a supporter, I'm sure as a player and a coach, than when you go to your biggest rival, who most people would say is the better, bigger club, and you just go and beat them in their own stadium. Can't beat that. So, well done, Cincy. But Columbus, they're in eighth place, you know, second to last playoff spot, but they got bigger things to worry about this year.
Yeah, they're still in Champions League. I think after they finish up with that competition, they're going to start to steamroll in the league a little bit. Wilfred Nancy recently did an interview, and he said he's still focused on Supporter Shield, and he still wants that to be a possibility, but it's difficult with the way this league is structured to be able to manage, you know, Supporter Shield, Champions League, manage all that at the same time. Very difficult. So impressive that he's even been able to do what he's done so far. But we'll move on down south to Acopa Tejas.
Dude, it feels like every other week there's a Copa Tejas match.
Yeah,
is that just me?
It is wild. I wonder if other people feel the same about like a Cascadia game, because I think each of these teams play each other three times, similar to Cascadia. So it does feel like it's nonstop, though. Anyways, FC Dallas hosting Austin, and they win 2-1. Petar Musa getting a goal. Jesus Ferreira getting his 50th MLS goal. Youngest player in MLS history to do that. Sebastian Driussi getting a goal as well, after he absolutely gifted the first goal to FC Dallas. I don't know if you saw that. It was like they're trying to do this build-up play. They ping it to him, and he's doing like a one-touch back pass and just like lays it straight in front of Musa. He just goes on and scores.
Tin pot league.
Yeah. Absolutely rough for Austin, but Dallas, way to take care of business at home in a it's been a rough season for them when nobody really expected it to be.
Way to get 3 points at home versus a rival.
That's an Austin team that has been good the past few weeks. So.
Stopping the momentum for Austin, but shall we move on?
Let's move on. What do we got next?
Kansas City hosting the Houston Dynamo. 2-1 win for Houston. Hector Herrera scoring an absolute just bender off of like a short corner kick, and then you got Ibrahim Aliyu scoring. Daniel Shalloway gets the goal for Kansas City, but Houston, much needed win, gets them a nice road victory, puts them in a cool seventh place.
Houston needed that. Getting Ache back, having him score a banger for them, they needed that. SKC starting to fall off, starting to lose a little momentum, but what can you do, man?
They're a hard team for me to gauge, because I feel like SKC is one of those teams that, like, disappoint, like the last few seasons, they'll disappoint regularly, but then they'll have these games where you got Johnny Russell and Daniel Shallowy and like one other new guy in the mix just absolutely firing on all cylinders. Like
when they turn up, those guys turn up.
Like against St. Louis in the playoffs, that was crazy what they did over two legs.
They'll turn up and they'll score three goals in the first half, but it's a matter of whether or not they can hold on to a lead, you know?
Anyway, St. Louis, speaking of which, hosted Chicago Fire. Not really a rivalry, but pretty close in proximity. There was a little bit of the smack talk between these teams online. Not nearly as much with Sporting Kansas City and St. Louis, but
More like a rivalry between cities, just for the history of other sports teams. But
that's what I've heard.
This is the first meeting that they've had, so for the soccer, you know, for MLS. But yeah, a little bit more of a rivalry just for the two cities here. But St. Louis takes care of business at home. Chicago could only muster up one goal. Did you see that goal, though? There's one thing that caught my eye in it. It's clipped to the back post. They get like a header back into the mix. I don't know who it was for Chicago, but he goes to like jump and try and like head it back in, like towards frame. And freaking Tim Parker just absolutely trucks the guy. He goes for a header, and you just see the guy who's like looking at the ball. His whole head just like snaps back. He just gets absolutely clattered to the ground as like Tim Parker just destroys him. And then Hugo Kuypers just still scores the goal. I don't know why. It just caught my eye like out of the corner like of the screen. You just see like this red-haired giant just absolutely destroy this guy, and then Chicago scores and levels the game.
Tim Parker is an MLS legacy center back, so we will always find a way to include him.
I can't wait to see that guy in the TST tournament in like 3 years' time.
I want to talk about that at the end. But hey, St. Louis getting some sweet, sweet revenge from Chicago knocking them out of the Open Cup last year in an empty stadium in Bridgeview. But
oh, man,
this is a bit of an exciting game. Colorado Rapids hosting the San Jose Earthquakes. Colorado goes up 2-0 in the first half. Navarro, who scored a decent amount of goals, to be fair, this year, and Omir Fernandez gets his first for the Rapids. But then San Jose, same thing as the Miami-Montreal game. They score a goal in the 44th minute, Pellegrino, and then Hernan Lopez, he gets a goal in his first start. So they're two newer DPs cooking. And then Christian Espinoza, their other DP, gets on the score sheet. So, I mean, San Jose, man, cooking.
Looking good. And this is exactly what you want to see for a team that was struggling at the bottom of the table. Their three most important players all turning up and getting goals for them when they need it.
Against a good Rapids team. If Rapids would have held on to that, they would have been 1 point off of first place.
A Rapids team, yeah, that's been flying. And the vibes in their locker room look impeccable. One thing I noticed, like, every team looks excited when they score goals, but when Omir Fernandez scored, this team looked like they had just won the World Cup. Like, he sprints to the corner, he does a knee slide, and then you just see, like, seven dudes behind him all doing knee slides and, like, tackling him, and it seems awesome. Like, the vibes they've built and the atmosphere they have around that club right now is awesome. And we've been saying it, man. This club, credit, their fans deserve it.
Credit to Chris Armas. Think something I never thought I'd say.
Because who would have thought that guy would bring the freaking Ted Lasso effect to Colorado?
Because when he got appointed, this was after their like ownership sent a letter to the fans and said pretty much, we're going to get these things right. We're going to deliver. And then they hire Chris Armas, and people are thinking, oh, man, seriously? But, yeah, vibes are high. Team looks excited. It's like these are the moments I hope Rapids fans in particular enjoy, because when your team is like flying like that, they're getting big wins on home, on the road, home games are fun to go to, the team genuinely looks excited, they're celebrating together. It's like one of the best feelings as a fan.
It's exciting when you can go into every game expecting your team to win or be in with a shout, like at least within a goal or, you know, something like that. So Rapids in a great spot right now.
But they lost.
But they still lost. We'll move on to two other teams that are in a great spot right now. LA Galaxy hosting Real Salt Lake. This is another prediction game. I predicted a RSL win. You predicted LA Galaxy win, right?
You were close.
Yep. I was close, and I got robbed with, like, the last kick of the game.
So, this was a 2-2 draw, and you got the best striker, in my opinion, in the league. Miguel Berry. And, just kidding, Chicho Arango with the brace, and then, man, Miguel Berry has been slandered online by Galaxy fans so much. They call him dead weight. They say, why is he at the club? He's on, like, a very low salary. But man comes in and scores a just flick goal that really should have been, like, caught by McMath. I don't know if you saw that one, but...
Yeah, that was rough.
He had cinder block boots on, McMath. Thought he could just lost it the moment.
He looked like he had just completely turned off for a second. It looked like a FIFA goal where your keeper is just, like, standing there waiting to collect the ball. A howler for him. He would want that one back without a doubt. But LA Galaxy, they created a lot of chances in this game. I mean, they definitely deserved a result out of it. So I wouldn't say that, you know, RSL got robbed per se. But Chicho Arango, though, that guy looks unstoppable. And in any other year where there's not a Miami team full of just absolute superstars, I think this guy would be the nailed on MVP, like, for sure. I don't think he gets it, though.
I don't think he gets it, but it wouldn't surprise me if either or Messi or Suarez misses an extended amount of time, partially for Messi due to Copa America. And I can see if one of those things happens, Chicho Arango, maybe he does it. I would love for the storyline of you have, like, this historic Messi season, but couldn't stop Chicho Arango.
I don't think they let that happen, unfortunately. But I honestly thought one of your predictions was going to come true. I thought Messi was about to get injured in that Miami game. We didn't talk about it, but it was like a horror tackle on him from somebody. I forget, the guy from Montreal just goes, like, studs up straight into his knee.
Dude, I think it's bound to happen. I don't want it to happen, but...
That just seemed like...
You're going to get, like, pure chaos. Alex Roldan is going to lose it in, like, League's Cup and just end Messi's career.
It just seemed absolutely crazy because I feel like most people kind of understand, like, you're playing against Messi. Like, yeah, play defense, play hard, but it's kind of like when you're playing against those guys, like, you're not going to just go in studs up and, like, try and injure, you know, the greatest player of all time. I wonder what would have happened to that guy's career if he had, like, actually injured Messi and got, like, a red card. Just loses his career. MLS just blacklists him. He just gets, like, a 19-year ban from playing.
Dude, probably. Dude, or his bodyguard would have rushed the field and just pounded him into the dust. Something like that. But we're going to move on. LAFC hosting the Whitecaps. Dude, LAFC just pounds on Vancouver every chance they get.
The Whitecaps... This is their boogeyman, dude.
This is like the RSL to the 2013 Portland Timbers. If you know, you know.
Every time Vancouver comes up against LAFC, it's never close.
Playoffs,
it's never close.
Champions League.
They just get absolutely demolished.
Same with Tigres for Vancouver as well.
It's kind of sad to see, but at the same time, after having my interactions with Vancouver fans in Vancouver...
And LAFC fans.
And LAFC
fans.
This
is like a team I wish both teams could lose.
Just 27 players all get injured during this game.
Dude, picture a League's Cup group of Vancouver, Tigres, and LAFC. What do you think Vancouver's, like, goal differential would be?
Negative.
Like 18?
9 or 10. Nahuel Guzman just doing, like, Fortnite dances on them.
Oh, man. I mean... LAFC finding their rhythm. Buonga with some good play in the attack. Oliveira gets a brace. Bogush with a goal. And, I mean, Giroud's coming. I mean, Lloris didn't have a howler this week, so that's good for them. But LAFC, you know, when the summer window happens, they're going to be a scarier team. So they're going to make a late push, I'm assuming, and things will look a lot better. But big win for them.
Shall we move on to the last game of the week?
So the Portland Timbers, the ultimate game of the weekend, host Seattle Sounders. Portland hadn't lost to Seattle since I was telling my wife, because I was a little upset after this game. So Portland loses 2-1 at home. Before I even get into that, I was telling my wife, I was like, you know the Sounders haven't beat the Timbers since August of 2021? And I was like, we were engaged. So we got engaged. We weren't even engaged, actually. We were dating, got engaged. A year later, almost got married. And then 2 years after that, we've like moved 2 times. Like, life is always very different since the last time Seattle got a result.
Absolutely crazy. This game just made me lose faith in the Timbers. I was distraught after this game, man. This was rough to watch as a Timbers fan. I saw a lot of people already saying like Neville out, and before, I mean, I was behind Neville. You know, I was kind of thinking like, you know, let this guy have a chance. It has been a very rough 10-game stretch, and to be fair, he hasn't had his starting lineup for most of those. But even when he does, I don't even know. I don't even understand what's going on. Like, at what point did it seem like a good idea to have Dyron Asprilla play left back? I mean, he subs Dyron Asprilla in towards the end of the game. I know you need more attackers out there, but you just see Kamal Miller like shouting to the bench from across the field, trying to figure out what formation they're even playing.
Because they tried that earlier in the year and got exposed.
Yeah, and it just seems like a trend with this team. Like, I was telling you this with Columbus, they have a set style of play, a set formation that they stick to, and every player knows what every position does. Like, Wilfred Nancy will have Darlington Nagbe play striker. He'll have Cucho play left back. He'll have guys play different positions in training, so they understand what it takes to play that. We have, like, none of that with the Timbers. There's no, like, set formation. We signed a guy to be a DP number 9. He shows up, and he's like, I actually want to play left winger. So now we're slotting in, you know, Rodriguez as a left winger, and just there seems to be no real identity or like cohesion with what's going on at the Timbers right now. I don't know if you need to clear the front office. I don't know if you need to clear out the team. It seemed before like it was just the defense was the problem, and there was, you know, like the attack was pretty set, but the attack the past few games have just looked like they're completely out of ideas.
That's what I was going to say. At first, it seemed like just defensive issues, but the tack, man. Like,
we resulted to, like, Zupric playing long balls for, like, our best chances in this game.
It seems like Portland's attacking philosophy is push Mascara up, get him the ball, try and, like, interchange with, like, a midfielder, and then just lose the ball at some point or whip in a hopeful cross. Like, there's no creativity, there's no, like, interchanging runs that float. You'll see, like, a 5-second snippet of it, like, every 20 minutes per game. The midfield doesn't close down anybody who's, like, attacking on threat on their goal. Good win for the Sounders, like, getting back on track, getting some results. Rui Diaz, I mean, that guy is just a killer. He has the most goals against Portland in MLS history. And
that goal was insane from him. First time, just placed perfectly, top left corner.
I mean, if you're Portland, I would normally say in a game like this, oh, Seattle's so lucky, man. Like, they always score these lucky goals and, like, feel hard done by. But Portland had 2 shots on target. They don't have anybody to blame other than themselves. Yeah, a little bit unfortunate with a deflection for the first goal. Then Rui Diaz, like, with a worldie. Like, what else can you do? But Portland didn't threaten.
I was going to say, Seattle didn't even look that great in this game. I think Portland were more like a victim of their own crimes against themselves. Like, they just looked terrible. Seattle probably, the best thing about their game was their defense. Their back line looked pretty solid. Like, Nuhu just kind of shut down Mosquera most of the time. Jackson Reagan and John Bell had, like, a surprisingly really good, you know, center back pairing. I'd say the only weak point was, like, Alex Rodon on the right wing didn't look that great, honestly. But, yeah, just – and Seattle sat deep for a lot of the game, especially after getting that lead. They sat really deep and just had a really I think it was Mo Edu at one point, the commentator, was saying it just looked like a training exercise because they just sat really deep. They kept their lines tight, and they just shifted side to side while – the Timbers, you know, completed like 30 passes in a row that went nowhere.
And then lost the ball.
And then lost the ball and got hit on a counterattack where Zupric had to just absolutely murder a man. I think he just destroyed like Rusnak or Roldan or one of those guys. I don't know. It wasn't the most heated game of any rivalry I've seen from the Timbers. It wasn't the, you know, the prettiest game from either team. There seemed like there wasn't a whole lot of fight from either team. Like Roldan and Chara were the only two on the field that seemed like they really understood the weight of the rivalry.
Yeah, just a pretty lifeless game, I'd say, honestly. It was just a weird one to watch, honestly. I'm done with that. I'm down to do predictions, but real quick, I'm going off script here. Chase sends me earlier the TST 7v7 tournament that took the soccer world by storm last year. Those little, was it 8v8? Or no, 7v7,
yeah.
Duh, it's in the name. And really interesting, fun, exciting, cool games to watch. And pretty much you have different teams that have been created or like men's league teams that have joined. Well, there's a club called Sneaky Fox Football Club that is just littered with MLS heritage.
When I was reading that list, it just sounded like me and you at like a 3 a.m. like party chat playing FIFA, just like rattling names off back and forth. I love it.
Dude, this, any one of these names sounds like you could just give a generic, like, who am I, or yeah, one of these games and take all the guesses and put it in a spreadsheet. I want one word from each of these players I name. I'm not going to name everyone on the list, but
just one word to like describe them,
or just a little thing about them that you enjoy. So, head coach of the Sneaky Fox Football Club, Mike McGee.
I want to say like forgotten legend, because nobody talks about that guy when they talk about MLS, but he was absolutely
one
lights out
one,
in MLS.
One MVP in the league. At the same time, we had Thierry Henry and Landon Donovan and Clint Dempsey. I'm going to say Bradley Cooper. He kind of reminds me of Bradley Cooper in the face.
I could see that. I could see that.
Alan Gordon, assistant coach for Sneaky Foxes.
Locker room pick.
No comment.
That guy.
Steven Lenhart.
MLS villain.
Absolutely. Nick Raimondo, assistant GM.
Penalty killer. That guy was... I love Nick Raimondo, dude. I wish we got more of him in MLS for longer.
Legend. You got Quincy Amerikwa.
I will never forget his goal against Adam Kawarse at Providence. I don't think it was at Providence Park. It was in
PayPal.
Yeah, it was at PayPal Arena or whatever. Just an absolute bomb dropped from like 40 yards out.
On like a dead sprint as well.
Yeah, that was an insanely impressive goal from a guy that went to USL like a year later.
David Akam, player.
What was that academy that he...
Nike Academy? That's what I was going to say.
The Nike Academy that he came through at. He's like a great value version of Kakuta Mane.
Which is weird because I feel like Kakuta Mane was in the league longer, but David Akam had like one or two like
just lights
belter
out
seasons.
Yeah.
Mix Diskerud.
The face of City Football Group. That guy was...
Took an unorthodox career path. Played in like South Korea.
Yeah, that was weird.
I was going to say... I don't know if it's the only one ever, probably not, but 2014 World Cup, he was the only player wearing the number 10 who didn't play at all. Didn't make it off the bench for the U.S. men's national team.
That's funny.
Thanks, Jurgen. next up, Brad Evans.
I hate him. I hate that guy, dude. What a just...
He's like a guy you know he just thinks he's better than you.
Yeah.
He's going to walk up with his Starbucks latte and like...
I was going to say, he looks like a guy that would just be chilling at like a cafe, like pretending to read a book.
Brings his laptop so like he looks like he's accomplishing something. Will Johnson.
Legend. Hot-headed legend of the game. That's like one guy I really want to meet for whatever reason, and I wish he like stayed involved with the Timbers.
What do you think he does? Like, some players, you know, they're a coach or like an analyst. What do you think Will Johnson's up to?
I don't know.
Working
I think
a desk job or something? I can't picture, like...
I don't know, actually. I
could see him as like a personal trainer, something to get kind of like his energy out, and which sounds weird to say about like a 40-year-old man, but...
Let me check his wiki real quick. I'll get back to you.
All right. Sasha Kljestan. That works as an answer.
I have mixed feelings about that guy. I love the way he played, but despise a lot about him other than that, though.
Justin Mapp.
Kind of forgot about that guy, actually.
Dude was a pacey, like, lights-out winger, and he was just, like, half-bald. He had, like, the monk haircut you can get on, like, FIFA, where it's, like, just one bald spot, and he would just cook, like, all these young, athletic fullbacks. Anyway, Kellen Rowe.
Ooh. That was, like, for me, like, prime Revs. Was watching that guy with
Lee Wynn. Like
Charlie Davies and Lee Wynn up there. That was a fun. Scotty and that was Caldwell. Like when Diego Fagundes was still like just coming through.
Those are all names I appreciate. All right. Last one. Chris Wingert.
Forgotten man. I don't even want to say legend, but that guy had a good stint in the league. Nothing super exciting. Nothing that great. You know, just a solid defender. When you think of him, what team do you think of him playing for the most?
Chris Wingert?
Yeah.
RSL.
Without a doubt. I didn't realize he got drafted by Columbus. Played for the Rapids and then crossed the rivalry.
Crossed the Rocky Mountain Divide.
To become a legend for RSL with two goals.
Weirdly, though.
247 games.
Weirdly, though, Kyle Beckerman and Nat Borchers also played at Colorado. Respect to the Rapids, though, for having a team like that, pretty much all domestic. I mean, it was a different era of MLS. They weren't as tapped into the international market as they are now, but having a legit team of just these like MLS drafted guys who have bought in, they found within the league. You got your Chris Wingerts, your Nat Borchers, your Kyle Beckermans and Nick Raimondos and all these guys. Luke Mulholland. Remember that guy?
I do. That guy was awesome. Just him jumping into a post to try and head the ball away.
That guy just looks like a grungy like bass player. Like some like weird trash rock band.
Dude, Chris Wingert, the end of his career is a little sad though. Gets taken in the expansion draft in 2014 for New York City FC, along with Ned Grabovoy. Him and Wingert both get taken from RSL to New York City FC. Goes back to RSL for the 2016-2017 campaign. Wraps his career up by playing for New York Cosmos B team. Gets four appearances with them, gets one goal, and then retires.
How does a guy even make a living in New York playing for the Cosmos Bees?
I don't think they do. I think you just live off your MLS, your league minimum that you were making.
Because I know Aaron Long, like when he played for Red Bulls too, he worked like construction in the off season.
That's crazy.
So,
and now that guy's
been to a World Cup. That's right, man.
It's wild.
Wrap up with some predictions and play 4 hours of FIFA.
I am absolutely down for that. We went with four games to predict because there's some midweek action. We went with two Wednesday games and two Saturday games.
These are all rivalries as well.
That was what
form.
I was going for. I went for all rivalry games. I almost picked two Red Bull games, but I decided not to. First up, though, on Wednesday, we have DC United versus the New York Red Bulls. What is the name of this derby?
The Lloyd Sam Derby.
Without a doubt. I got DC taking care of business at home against a Red Bulls team, 2-1. I think DC knows their game. I think they're going to sit back and defend deep and just break on the counter and hit balls into the box for Benteke. This, I think the profile of this game fits them well. Red Bulls want to kill you on the break. They want to have space in behind. DC is not going to really allow that too much, and they have just an outlet up top that if they just smash a ball in the air, you're almost guaranteed that guy to win it and like flick it on to somebody.
I can definitely see that. I'm a big believer in that front unit of New York Red Bulls, Forsberg, Dante Venzier, Lewis Morgan. So I'm going 2-0 for the Red Bulls.
I could see it as well, but I think Benteke takes care of business. Austin versus Houston. Austin is hosting. I don't know. I could see it going both ways here, but I think the floodgates open up for Houston. Austin's defense is still not that great. Ache coming back into the fold for Houston. I could see them.
You know, he lives for those Copateas.
I think he gets this team hyped and they win 3-1.
I can't even picture that guy raising his voice. I can't even picture him speaking.
Do you see him just sprint over after he scored his goal, sprint over and just tackle Ben Olsen and just start screaming in his face? Love to see it. Hey, love, man, to see those two guys just having a nice brotherly bond.
He's played for Diego Simeone, but I mean, when you're playing Benny Ball in Houston, there's nothing quite like it. I'm going Austin 1-0. This to me feels like a Driussi, like, just well placed finish in the box.
Believable.
Like I said last when we were covering these games, there's a Copa Tejas match every week. So,
without a doubt. Next up, though, we have Seattle hosting Vancouver, and this is a sad state of affairs when you know both of us are picking Seattle for this one. It just feels like they're building momentum.
They had a rough going out against them last time. Two red cards, got beat at home convincingly. I think they avenged themselves. 1-0, Seattle, unfortunately.
I'm going 2-1. I think Vancouver plays a little too expansive not to get a goal in this game. I don't know. Maybe Seattle just sits deep again for the whole game and just limits the space Vancouver can play into. But we'll see. I'm going Seattle 2-1. But for our last game, the best game of the week, arguably, actually.
Honestly, could be.
Could be the best game of the week. RSL hosting Colorado Rapids. These have been fun games to watch this year.
I was going to say, I'm actually really excited for this one because this also happened about a month, 2 months ago, about, and Rapids were down 1-0 at RSL, and they came back, scored like two late goals, and they were like hyped. It was their first win there in years, and I remember Cole Bassett got the winner, like the local lad from Colorado. Their fans were like loving it. Chris Armas was like, this is for them, pretty much. And so RSL wanting to avenge, I'm going 2-1 for RSL.
Yeah. I mean, Colorado, they've looked great this year, and they seem like they have a new energy about them. They have a new, like, kind of mindset. Seems like they had a mind block in a lot of these rivalries in the past. And for that reason, I'm going RSL 3-0. I think Chicho Arango just wipes the floor with their defense.
Lawless Abubakar is not going to...
I don't think he does it. I don't know. I mean, Colorado may get a goal in this game, but I see RSL comfortably winning this one. Shouldn't discourage Colorado fans, though. RSL just is that good. They're really well-balanced.
Yeah, this is first versus fourth place in the West. 4 points separating them, so pretty even-keeled match.
Yeah, RSL just looks that good this year. They have a great squad. This is random. I don't know why I didn't think of this when we were talking about their game, but did you see when old Moon Boy Diego Luna just, like, sprints into Chicho Arango as Chicho's, like, dribbling and just, like, tries to take the ball off his foot, basically? And it just leads to them, like, colliding, and then LA Galaxy just, like, get the ball and go and score.
Sounds like our pro clubs match that's about to start here.
Anyways, that wraps it up this week. That is that is our predictions. That is our feelings about the league. If the Timbers lose again, I will jump off the balcony from which I is outside right behind my TV. I will just open that door and jump about 10 feet to the ground. I'm not serious. I won't do that. But the Timbers have just ruined my mood for a while now.
Yeah, can't wait to watch the replay of the next game. I can't watch it live and just have all this hope and, you know, come home from a long day of work and then.
I was talking to a guy at work today, and we were talking about the Timbers game, and he goes,
"Is this the city guy?"
Yeah, and he goes, "Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. I have it taped at home." And I just told him, "I was like, just delete it, man. Don't bother." There's another guy there with us, is another rep, and he was like, "Yeah, he's like, I didn't watch it, but the score made it looked like it was a close game." It's like
close and mediocre.
It was not a close game. It was a tough to watch game. It was just scrappy and rough, and yeah. I mean, if you were to ask me a month ago, I'd say the Timbers are like one of the must watch teams for like neutrals because the attack was great, the defense was poor, so it led to these fun, exciting games. Now we're just terrible on both fronts.
Phil says he's going to get it right, though.
Oh, man. Let's wrap this up and go play 7 hours of FIFA Ultimate Team Pro Clubs.
Hey, shout out to Portland, though, for having an elite sponsor now. Tillamook Cheese / Ice Cream / Dairy Products.
I almost forgot about that. / Jerky.
There was some hope from that game, and it came from the jersey sponsor. And I think now DiBella has the most winning sponsorship run of all time. They had one game, they won 4-1, so that's 3 points plus 3 goal difference. DiBella, man.
Bring him back.
Crappy sponsor, I will say.
No, don't bring him back. They suck.
Is that it?
Oddly enough, this is so weird. I saw a guy like walking down the road near my apartment recently just wearing a DiBella jacket, and I was like, dude, where'd that guy get that Timbers, like, weird Timbers jacket? It was just like a salesman, like a DiBella like salesman was just walking down like the main road by my apartment wearing this jacket that had like a giant sponsor on the back. And I was like, ooh, that guy better be careful wearing all that gear out here.
Man, yeah, that's risky territory back here. But
but we'll wrap it up for another week of Timbers mediocrity.
Preston Judd?
End it there.
Come on the show.